This is 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Amy Jeffries. In its Poisoned Places series, NPR reports that industry here in Louisiana is emitting more smog-producing chemicals than it should, and regulators aren't doing enough to curtail the pollution. During All Things Considered Thursday, Elizabeth Shogren honed in on Exxon's Baton Rouge refinery.
Sydney and Almina Perret live a block from its south gate. They've been here 20 years in a little house with a big front porch. And these days, they've got toddler toys in their driveway.
I got my grandkids here right now and two daughters.
You know? If you stand in front of their place and look straight down the street, you see at least a dozen plumes of white and gray exhaust. Almina Perret chimes in.
That's something you see every day. The same thing, if not more. Sometimes it'd be a darker gray. Sometimes it'd be black smoke coming out.
To talk more about what the Perets are seeing and breathing from their front porch, I'm joined by Ed Overton, Professor Emeritus of Environmental Science at LSU, and Robert Berg, State Regulatory Advisor for Exxon. Welcome. When we see what was described in Elizabeth Shogren's story as black smoke or white smoke or gray smoke, what are they looking at? What is that exactly? And how does a person in that neighborhood in Baton Rouge kind of know when to worry and when not to worry? Ed?
Well, the chemicals that they were worried about in that study, the so-called volatile organic compounds, all of them are colorless. Now, when they get out and they react with some of the other things in the air, sometimes you can get a slight haze or a yellow-brownish color, but the things that we can see are the least dangerous of the things. It's virtually 100% steam being boiled off, condensing in the air, and basically making clouds. Clouds, of course, are white. When you see it black, you're probably looking at some flaring that is burning off some soot from that flaring, much like you see coming out of a diesel engine. But the volatile organic compounds, the VOCs, particularly those that are very toxic or very reactive in ozone formation, are the ones of most concern for air quality.
Right. Those VOCs, those volatile organic compounds, are essentially the key ingredients for smog, what we know is
one
smog.
One of the key ingredients, yes.
Yeah. So in the story, NPR's Elizabeth Shogren reported that Louisiana refineries and chemical plants released something in the range of 7 million pounds of these compounds above what was within the amount that had been authorized by state regulators between 2008 and 2011. Robert Berg, to you, I just wonder if you can explain a little bit about how you measure these compounds and releases that happen.
What you're referring to, what the article referred to, are unauthorized discharges. And if we have an unauthorized discharge, then we'll have to deal with that with the regulatory agency.
You're talking about, okay, there was an unauthorized release of something. So how do you find out about that? Can you give me an example of what the series of events is that happens?
It may be as simple as taking a sniffer, a handheld sniffer, to a particular source that we might think that we hear is causing a problem, up to using these sophisticated infrared cameras that can actually see hydrocarbon emissions. So the compounds that Dr. Overton referred to as being colorless and sometimes odorless, we can actually see with this infrared camera. It's a very sophisticated tool that ExxonMobil was instrumental in developing. Our Baton Rouge complex had serial number 2 of these cameras. Our Baytown refinery had serial number 1. It's not a regulatory requirement, but we have 3 of them, and they cost approximately $100,000 a piece. It's something that we just felt like we needed to help ensure the safety of our folks.
Right, yeah. And in another installment of NPR's Poisoned Places series, they actually talked about the use of those infrared cameras in Houston being a big factor in air pollution declining there and helping to detect these invisible gases.
We worked with DEQ, actually brought their staff out and demoed this and said, you know, hey, this is something we think that the agency would be interested in looking at, because we were working with the individual that developed these cameras, took them from military use to environmental use. And we actually had DEQ in. DEQ said, this looks like a really good tool. And DEQ subsequently used that to do some emission studies and now have cameras of their own.
one of the things that came up in Elizabeth's story, which was a leak incident, I guess, but maybe it serves as another just sort of an example of kind of how stuff gets detected. On June 14th of last year, there was what turned out to be a big incident, a major event, with 30,000 pounds of benzene and 25,000 pounds of other chemicals having been released at the Exxon refinery in Baton Rouge. But initially, it was reported as a very small spill, just above the threshold of what was required to be reported. And it was only a week later that we knew it was much bigger. What accounts for that kind of lag in determining what got spilled and how it got spilled?
Well, typically in any incident, you say, look, hey, we got a little problem. And you don't know how big the problem is till you investigate it. So if I'll use the analogy during the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, remember those initial estimates were 1,000 barrels. And, when people really looked at it hard, turns out it's 60,000 barrels a day. When there's a problem, the first effort always, always, always is solving the problem. Stop the flow of whatever, the spillage, and then worry about how much is spilled. So it strikes me that a week is certainly not an unreasonable time to look at, what went wrong, how much fluid went in there, did it evaporate? It's better to be careful and get it right than to throw a bunch of numbers out there, because you can cause public panic.
Put this in perspective for me. What does 30,000 pounds of benzene mean to health of the people who might be in the immediate area? How do we know that a week is okay?
Well, benzene's a dangerous compound. But we're exposed to benzene almost all the time. It's a component in gasoline. So every time we fill up with gasoline, we get a little bit of benzene. A little bit of benzene, our systems in the body can handle. Scientific studies have showed that if you're exposed to fairly low levels of benzene over long periods of time, that it can lead to certain unique cancers that are not found outside of benzene exposure. So benzene is a dangerous compound, but all of those studies have been associated with long-term exposure working in a plant that used benzene. But the chemical goes in the air, and then it starts being diluted. To put things in perspective, Robert, 30,000 pounds is my guess, is a tanker truck full of a liquid, in that ballpark.
Yeah, and I want to note specific to this, to get down to the specifics of this particular event. That material was released over a long time period. It wasn't all released at once or all in one day. It actually went from where it was released immediately into an underground sewer hub and went to our wastewater treatment system. So it was released back and kind of in the center of our facility.
So just to make sure that I have that clear, so basically what you're saying is what that was essentially a slow leak. And so your initial monitoring of or measurement of what had leaked was very small. But then when you went and looked at, the source of the leak, you found that there was more missing than would have come out from whatever small hole.
Well, I mean, let's go back to that. We have an obligation to report promptly. And the state police have defined that as being less than an hour, because from a public safety standpoint, they want to know, do I need to block a road? Do I need to call a shelter in place? ExxonMobil cannot call a shelter in place for our community. The state police and other agencies have to call that shelter in place. So we have an obligation to notify them within 1 hour. As I mentioned, we couldn't see this material because it was going underground, and so we didn't know immediately. So we called and we said, hey, we're pretty sure we're over the reportable quantity for these chemicals. We will get back and update you as we find out more information. So imagine this going through several miles of underground pipe as we're trying to ascertain how much was released. So it sounds like the number increased dramatically. It's because, as Dr. Overton alluded to, we've got to balance the soon versus the accurate, and so we try to do the best we can in a short period of time. And the agencies that responded, the fire department, the state police, the LDQ, EPA's contractors, we had a lot of folks on site at our side. And it was determined that we didn't have anything that showed in our monitoring that would determine that we needed to block any roads or to do any shelter in place in the community. I'd also note that during that time, I'm not sure about DEQ, but we did not receive any odor complaints from the community. So we have well-published hotlines. They're on refrigerator magnets we hand out. We publish a neighborhood newsletter that goes out to 26,000 of our closest neighbors every month. And in there, we publicize any questions, call. And somebody on our public affairs team is on 24-hour call. If they get an odor complaint or I heard a noise or something looks funny, they immediately follow up with our plant superintendents who are on site, and they go out and investigate.
Ed Overton, when you look at sort of the state of things now, I mean, we've talked a little bit about how, you know, the bar has certainly been raised incrementally over time. The air emissions standards have become more stringent over time in Louisiana, as certainly pretty much everywhere in the United States. So, I mean, are we there yet? I mean, is there a kind of an ultimate goal of there being, you know, zero emission refineries out there, or is that sort of absurd?
Well, it may be absurd to go to zero emissions. I think there's no such thing. That's an elusive dream. But minimum emissions is certainly not. And we've certainly come a long way, but we're never there. I mean, this is a continuing process. If you think you're there, then something's wrong with your philosophy, your way of looking at it. You've got to go improvements. You're continually expanding. You're replacing things as you find out additional information. For instance, in that Texas study, one of the things those cameras did is they found a lot of emissions that weren't associated with a given process unit in a plant, a truck going down the highway or barges on the Houston Ship Canal. And so procedures were put in place to limit those. All of those collectively were part of the overall effort to improve the air quality. And Houston has done a dramatic job. I think Louisiana was in better shape to start with than Houston when Houston was listed as the dirtiest air pollution in the country. But continually trying to improve is important. One of the things I would like to comment on is that, DEQ had one of the finest analytical air quality labs in the nation. And unfortunately, I think that has had to been shut down for cost reasons. And a lot of those analysis, I guess, are being farmed out to labs in Texas. But I thought that was an unfortunate event. I know we had a lab that was recognized nationally for doing air quality, and we are a heavily industrialized state. So there's steps forward and there's steps back, and in my opinion, that was a big step back. But as long as new technology has come along, and certainly the infrared cameras are part of that new technology that may overcome some of the loss of the capability to actually detect these chemicals.
Robert Berg, thank you very much. Ed Overton, thank you all for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Amy Jeffries on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge and WRKF.org.